Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Kathy Kearns, who's serving as our worship associate. I also want to let you know that we have a new tradition this year. You may have noticed that there is an additional Christmas tree out in the Founders Lounge. The members of the Art and Decorating Committee are inviting folks from the congregation to bring an ornament from home to be part of our family tree. This is one, essentially, that you would share with the congregation and then take home with you after the holiday season, so you're welcome to participate.
The chalice lighting is an excerpt from a reading called AIDS Advent Sunday. We light a candle and await the coming of light and hope, the promise foretold, fulfilled. We light a candle and await the pealing of the bells in joy triumphant, where now they toll in somber mourning. We light a candle and await the day the quilt at last is finished, can be lovingly folded and nestled in cedar, and taken out only on cold nights to wrap up in the warmth of remembrance. We light a candle and await.
Katie died in 1992. She was 34, and we were best friends and had been since the start of high school in Manaway. Our birthdays were 2 days apart. We were both named Catherine, and we were generally inseparable until the end of college. I was one of the few people she told when she and her husband learned of their being HIV positive in 1985. That was 25 years ago, pretty early in the epidemic, and information was sparse. But I became a fast expert, and that was without the internet. She couldn't tell her family, most of her friends, or her coworkers. They were in San Francisco, ground zero for HIV, its research, and treatments. Yet they had to keep quiet until about 2 years before her death, when she made a decision to be open to everyone. Her obituary in the Record Courier was the first, and maybe only, one to state her cause of death as AIDS. Katie inspired me from the start to learn all I could and to do all that I could to speak out for and offer support to persons living with HIV and AIDS. Things are better now. People are more accepting and less fearful. Treatments are better, and people are living well with HIV. I like to think that I've helped in some regard. My current position in HIV prevention and testing at Town Hall 2 has kept me very busy for nearly 15 years. However, secrecy and misinformation still prevail in our rural communities of Portage County, and people continue to engage in risky activities. Recent funding cuts threaten the availability of life and death medications to many HIV-positive persons in Ohio and across the country. I fear that we may have a return of high death rates if we aren't able to restore support for these life-saving treatments. Our compassion and support and political action are needed more than ever now to help the other Katies stay healthy. Come, let us worship together.
We have the opportunity this morning to celebrate our caring ministries. I'd like to invite the leaders of our two care teams to come join me on the chancel. All of the pastoral associates as well. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to pick up a copy of our Ministry of Caring brochure, which you can find downstairs in Fessenden Hall on one of the bulletin boards. It's a blue brochure which describes the care that I offer to the congregation, as well as the lay pastoral care members of the congregation offer one another. One of our teams is called the Helping Hands Network, and it's coordinated by Mary Ann Casper and Stephanie Summers. Mary Ann is here with us first service, and she and Stephanie share the leadership of the Helping Hands, which is made up of many members and friends of the congregation who volunteer to help other members and friends of the congregation with practical assistance. Anyone who can cook, drive, do light housework, or send a card can be part of this caring group. The more people who volunteer to be a part of the network, the more widely spread the caring connections in our congregation. In your order of service today, you'll find a Helping Hands volunteer form. If you're willing to be a part of the network, please fill out the form and place it in the offering basket later in the service, or give it to me or to Marianne afterwards. You'll only be asked to help in your areas of interest and only as your schedule allows. Our other care team is called the PALS, the Pastoral Associate Listeners. Susanna Smart is the coordinator of our Pastoral Associate Listener Team, which is made up of several people from our congregation who have made a commitment to serve as a listening presence for others in our community. The PALS receive initial training in listening skills when they join the team, and then ongoing support in our monthly meetings. The PALS are not a substitute for the care I offer the congregation, but rather an extension of it. At all times, but especially while I am on leave this winter, I hope you'll feel free to call upon them for their care and support. Three new members of the PAL team, Diana Watt, Patty Miller, and Noreen Kamgori, have just completed their training. They're joining those continuing on the team, Jane Krimmer, Bonnie Harper, Christy Anderson, Shana Jane Steinhaus, Trudy Deal, and Bev Cole. Will you please join me in formally recognizing their commitment by sharing in the responsive reading printed in your order of service? That's a good way, too. All of us have a share in strengthening and deepening our community of faith. We give thanks that all of us are called to learn and serve in recognition of our interests and gifts.
We are committed to helping make this congregation a more caring community. We will serve faithfully and with deep respect the concerns with which we are entrusted.
We commend you for your commitment to our community, and we deeply appreciate your willingness to serve. Thank you very much. As we prepare to share together in a time of silence, I invite you to meditate upon these words by Naomi Shihab Nye, the Palestinian-American poet. Kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride thinking the bus will never stop, the passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore, only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread, only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder, we know that it is not by our will that we have awakened to see another day. It comes as grace, a gift freely given. This is the day May we rejoice and be glad in it. May we be open to all that life brings us, joy and sorrow, dark and light, hope and fear, everything. For everything is life, and all life is precious. We lift our hearts in thanks. Amen, and blessed be.
This is a story of how I learned that my younger brother, Joey, had become infected with the HIV virus. This story is not unlike any other story out there. This is one out of thousands, maybe millions of similar stories. So I am not unique, and I am not alone. I had grown up in a very conservative household. My father was a diehard Republican, and we grew up with conservative values. Joey and I were typical siblings, growing up with the usual fights and sibling rivalry. Of course, he was very neat, liked nice clothes, expensive colognes, and owned many pairs of fine shoes. I knew at a young age that Joey was gay, and I had no problem with this. In the spring of 1986, Joey came to visit me. I was living in New Philadelphia while taking classes at the KSU branch. He revealed to me at that time that he was HIV positive. My initial reaction was anger. I was very angry at him. It was an ugly anger, too. I said things like, "How could you do this? And you've destroyed the family." And there were some strong expletives as well, just to punctuate the moment. But as I looked at it deeper, I was angry at myself. You see, I was the older brother, and as such, I always felt it was my job to protect Joey from harm. I had done so on many occasions in the past. I knew he was gay, but I never saw this coming. AIDS was something that happened to people in Haiti and gay men in San Francisco, not a 20-year-old college student at William & Mary, not to my brother. I felt that I had failed him. Instead of feeling resentful at me for my anger, Joey reacted in a way that both surprised me and opened my eyes to his plight. He offered me understanding and compassion. He spoke to me and told me it wasn't my fault. We cried together that night and some nights afterward, but we promised each other we were going to try and spend as much time together as we could, and indeed we did. We had many great visits and a lot of laughs and some tears. I shared my engagement to Kim with him, and he was the best man at our wedding, and he loved Kim very much. Joey passed on January 15, 1991, almost 20 years ago. He was only 25 years old. I visited him in the hospital just before he passed, but I had to return to Ohio and couldn't stay any longer. He was heavily sedated, and as he lay in this hospital bed under the influence of morphine and other toxic medications, I went to him to say my goodbyes. I told him that I loved him. He slowly opened his eyes and looked right at me. It was something he hadn't done all week, and he said, "I love you too." And he was gone the next day. Almost exactly a year after his passing, I was hired as a property manager at the Summit AIDS Housing Corporation in Akron. Today, the organization is called the Community AIDS Network. The organization was about to open a new home in the Highland Square area, and we were going to house five men living with HIV. I met Kat Holtz just a month later as she underwent volunteer training with us, and shortly thereafter, Jennifer May also joined us. A year or two later, I had finally built up the strength to memorialize Joey with a panel for the Names Project quilt, and I'll always be grateful to the folks that helped me make it. Joey had made me an activist, and he had taught me how to show compassion. His kind words to me at his darkest hour resonated in my heart, and I drew strength from his experience when caring for the men at Micah House, and shortly after, we also opened a 16-unit apartment building, Harmony Place. Joey's disease touched everyone who met him in a positive way. His courage and compassion as he lived his life in pain was a lesson for all of us. I still miss Joey very much. Last year, I received a special gift in the mail. One of our teachers at Seven Oaks School had come across a geography project he had turned in and thought I should have it. She had held on to it because it was the best in the class. Not surprising. Knowing Joey's intelligence and perfection, and she was keeping it as a model to show future students. As I said before, Joey was very neat and worked very hard to please everyone. I'm so very grateful for this gift. It's a silly thing, but when I touch the pages, I feel like I'm immediately connected to Joey. I feel like I am touching him again.
We have some red ribbons for you. Please wear one to honor someone who has been lost to AIDS. Wear one in compassion for someone who lives with HIV. Wear one to support their families and loved ones. Wear one to promote education and prevention efforts around the world and our local community. Wear one to show your commitment to a day without HIV and AIDS. And while we hand them out, we're going to hear a song. It's written by Desmond Child. It's called The Stone Quilt. And I'll read what is written here. Last October, I went to see the AIDS quilt in Washington when it was laid out on the great lawn in front of the Capitol. It was the first time I had seen the panel for my brother Joey, who died on January 15, 1991. Every panel represented one life. When I was looking at the fragile cloth panels, a vision came into my mind of a stone quilt. I saw an immense terrace paved with hundreds of thousands of panels of many colored stones from all over the world and carved with the names of all who have died of AIDS, a permanent national memorial. I dedicate the stone quilt to them.
There are many ways we can respond to the problem of AIDS. Some of them are actions we can personally take to help ourselves or others. But at times, responding to the need is such a challenge that we need the involvement of the larger community. An example is current efforts to decrease mother-to-child transmission of HIV. Pregnant women with HIV can transmit the virus to their babies during pregnancy, childbirth, or when breastfeeding. In 1993, researchers reported that administering the drug AZT could dramatically decrease the risk of HIV transmission. While the risk from mother-to-child transmission is about 1 in 3 if the mother and child are not treated, only 2% of babies become infected if they and their mothers receive what is now the standard of care for treatment in developing countries. We can all celebrate this great success. Unfortunately, our brothers and sisters living in low-income countries face a different reality. Treatment of HIV-infected persons is difficult in many countries that lack the monetary resources and healthcare infrastructure needed for the most effective treatments, and 90% of the cases of mother-child transmission occur in Africa. The hopeful news is that several World Health Organizations have adopted the goal of decreasing mother-to-child HIV transmission rates. The development of cheaper treatments is helping these efforts, and rates of treatment for HIV-positive pregnant mothers in low-income countries is rising. While only 10% of pregnant women received any treatment to prevent HIV transmission in 2004, about half receive treatment today. Nevertheless, this means that half the pregnant women in these countries receive no treatment, and many of those receiving treatment do not get the best treatments available. Those of us living in wealthier nations do have a responsibility to people living in much more disadvantaged situations. Our world is one world.
Our world is one world. The reality of HIV/AIDS affects us all, and we are all responsible. Our responsibility begins with understanding the facts and being informed about our own status. We need to know the facts about how to protect ourselves, and we need to make sure that our kids are informed before they are sexually active. We need to take responsibility for knowing our HIV status. Currently, over 80% of people who are HIV positive do not know they have been infected with the virus. Kat brought some of the resources she uses in her work as an HIV educator. They're on the table outside the sanctuary door. Take the resources. Review them yourself or pass them along to someone else. The evidence is very clear. Prevention education works. Since 1999, when the epidemic is thought to have peaked globally, there has been a 19% reduction in the number of new infections, and this is success we can all celebrate. But as David Rankin wrote in his AIDS Advent Sunday poem, it isn't yet time to put the quilt away. The struggle is far from over. Right now, 33 million people worldwide are living with HIV. Most new infections are transmitted during unprotected heterosexual sex, including paid sex. Rates of infection are on the rise amongst heterosexual elders and on the rise again amongst young gay men. The highest rates of new infection are occurring among young people under the age of 25. Last year, approximately 1.8 million people died of AIDS, making it a leading cause of death worldwide, and in Africa, it's the number one killer. Our world is one world. The reality of HIV/AIDS affects us all, but it doesn't affect us all in the same way. More than two-thirds of all HIV-positive people and over 90% of HIV-positive children in the world live in sub-Saharan Africa. Women represent slightly more than half of all people living with HIV worldwide, and in sub-Saharan Africa, women are 60% of the infected people. Gender inequalities, lack of access to services, and sexual violence often put women at greater risk for infection. Worldwide, only 35% of the people who qualify for HIV therapy have access to treatment. And as Kathy told us, only about half of the HIV-positive pregnant women in low-income countries are receiving the treatment they need to prevent HIV transmission to their babies. Challenging as these statistics are, it's important to realize that they actually represent progress. We have seen a significant reduction in the number of AIDS-related deaths in the last few years and a significant increase in the availability of treatments. The evidence is clear that effective treatment has been reducing the rate of death and improving the quality of lives for many people. This is also success we can celebrate, and we need to affirm the victories so we can find courage to stay committed to the work that needs to be done. Our responsibility begins with us, with our own education about our own status and the way to prevent infection. Our responsibility ends with others, with our efforts to care for others as we would have others care for us. The global effort to end the AIDS epidemic is going to require ongoing collaboration between governments, World Health Organizations, scientists, healthcare providers, educators, musicians, artists, and many organizations in the private sector, including foundations, businesses, and the pharmaceutical industry. Whether or not we work directly on HIV prevention and treatment and in any of these fields or as a volunteer, every single one of us has the capacity to be part of the solution. It's clear that lack of access to services continues to be a major obstacle in combating this epidemic. In recent years, our federal government has stepped up to the plate to financially support the global fight against HIV/AIDS. When funding decisions are being made, whether here in Ohio or in Washington, D.C., we can write and call our public officials and encourage them to support funding for comprehensive prevention and treatment services here at home and around the world. We can let our leaders know that our faith calls us to advocate for justice, equity, and compassion for all people. That's one way we can make a real difference. But there's another way, and it's a way that we can practice every single day. The social stigma those who are HIV positive have remains a major challenge in the fight against this disease. I was 19 years old when my uncle Rick died of AIDS. I went to see him in the hospital right before he died. I was scared and very sad, but I didn't tell very many people what was happening in my world. The loss was hard enough, and I was afraid of the judgment, so I remained silent. But the activists in ACT UP taught us that silence equals death, and I have come to believe that this is true. We can make a difference by refusing to surrender to silence, by refusing to surrender to stigma. We will not be silent. We will affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. For the ones we have loved and lost to AIDS, we will not be silent. For the ones who are living with HIV today, we will not be silent. For the ones who are most at risk of infection tomorrow, we will not be silent. We will speak up, we will speak out, we will speak for the way of compassion. May it be so, and amen. I send you with these words from the 19th century Universalist John Murray. You may possess a small light, but let it shine. Use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of men and women. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Preach the kindness and everlasting love of God. Go in peace.